This weekend and beyond, most of the football talk will be about teams that win. That is as it should be. The two teams that don't lose this month will face each other in the Super Bowl, about which no hyperbole is excessively hyperbolic and which every real American will watch, or at least bet on. But before the frenzy leading to the nation's single most glorious day becomes overwhelming, let us consider a team that didn't win. Lots of teams qualify for that distinction, but only one, the New York Jets, is coached by a guy who promised in the preseason that his team would win the Super Bowl. New York head coach Rex Ryan did that. It's just who he is. Then the Jets didn't make the playoffs. They finished the season 8-8. Coach Ryan wept briefly and acknowledged that his prediction had failed to pan out, which everybody already knew. Shortly thereafter, Greg McElroy, the team's fourth-string quarterback, told an audience of radio listeners in Alabama that the Jets' locker room had been infected by, quote, a corrupt mindset. Mr. McElroy was in an excellent position to observe the alleged corruption because he missed the season with an injury. Free of the distraction that playing football would have presented, he noticed teammates failing to, quote, buy in to the Jets' system. Maybe they were also cheating at bridge. This is what happens when you lose. Another thing that happens when you lose is that your coach gets fired if he's lucky, because the coach who gets fired immediately finds another NFL job in a city where nobody has anything against him. If he doesn't get fired, he's lampooned, savaged, and ridiculed, especially if he announced over the summer that his team would win the Super Bowl. This week, in a column headed, "Doesn't Take Rookie QB to See Rex Is Done," one writer solemnly intoned, quote, "It's the end," because Rex Ryan had, quote, "lost control of the Jets, who would never win while he was in charge." I wasn't surprised by those conclusions. Teams that fail to win are coached by guys who lose control. Quote, "corrupt mindsets," end quote, often fester in the locker rooms of clubs that fail to live up to their promise, whether or not that promise is explicitly made by the coach. Or so I read every season.
We are living in a world so corrupt.
So corrupt.
We are living in a world so corrupt.
So corrupt.
Yeah, I'm living in this world. So corrupt.
If you're perplexed by Patsy Cline, flummoxed by Fugazi, or bamboozled by Bartok, Brubeck, or Booker T and the MGs, please visit onlyagame.org to learn more about the music you hear on Only a Game.
But it ends, leading to destruction.
Sudden destruction.
Even in gladness, the heart weeps. And the end of joy is grief.
It's 22 and a half minutes before the hour.
Support for Only a Game comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced. Nuance, offering Dragon 11 speech recognition software for creating documents and emails and surfing the web all by speaking at nuance.com. And Oliver Wyman, a global management consulting firm with 3,000 professionals serving global 1,000 companies, oliverwyman.com. This is NPR.
The president of the Milwaukee Polar Bear Club, Garth Gaske, ran into Lake Michigan on New Year's Day for the 60th time. Until recently, he wasn't sure he was going to be able to do it. Mr. Gaske is 82, and he had said that after he'd had four stents inserted in his heart, his daughter had felt the annual icy dip was perhaps not a good idea. But on Sunday, into the lake, Garth Gaske scrambled, accompanied by his granddaughter and his great-granddaughter. The aforementioned daughter, Kathy Mayer, watched from the shore. When she was told that her father had said he might take the plunge again to begin 2013, Ms. Mayer said she'd be taking her dad to Arizona, and though she might have said, let's see him jump into Lake Michigan from there, she didn't.
Chip flats in your 4x4, he'll make the polar bears cry.